This is the Blind World Podcast, coming to you live from Hoover, Alabama. Your host is Shane Jackson. Today's episode, episode 21, will be a discussion of things related to The Lord of the Rings. Sit back and relax and enjoy the podcast. The music provided by Andre Louie of AndreLouie.com. That's AndreLouis.com. Also, hello to Blind Cool Tech and Larry Scoopcon and the gang. Now, The Lord of the Rings, episode 21.
Greetings. This is Blind World Podcast number 21, and I'm hoping this one will go out over Blind Cool Tech as well. My name is Shane Jackson, and I'm located in Hoover, Alabama. On the BCT email list, or the Blind Cool Tech email list, there's a lot of discussion going on about The Lord of the Rings and J.R.R. Tolkien and that sort of thing. So today I thought I might give a little background on The Lord of the Rings, because I've done a lot of research here, and it's one of my favorite pieces of literature, actually. One of my favorite series in literature is Lord of the Rings. So today we're going to talk about that. And the first thing I'm going to do is talk about J.R.R. Tolkien. He was an excellent English scholar, and his main area was Anglo-Saxon literature. He was big on Beowulf and all the old Anglo-Saxon dialects. You had West Saxon and Mercian and all that. And he was just, he was very excited about studying Old English. So he began to tell stories to his kids, and it began to become something more than that. He began to develop a whole world. Now, it is worth noting that J.R.R. Tolkien was a very devout Christian of the Catholic faith. So a lot of his work has Catholic symbolism in it, as well as other forms of symbolism, like ancient Anglo-Saxon myth and Norse, all sorts of Norse things. So he was a pretty cool dude, and it's a little bit about the man, and he spent years, literally, working on this whole concept of Middle Earth and the realms beyond. In the beginning, there was Ilúvatar. Ilúvatar, of course, was the god of all things. Ilúvatar was the creator. And Ilúvatar created a group of beings called, at first they're called the Ainur. And the Ainur had a continuing song that lasted many, many, many generations. And they were all good. And the song was good, and Ilúvatar was pleased. But all of a sudden, something went out of tune, and turns out it was one of the Ainur, whose name was Melkor. Or in some of the older tales, he's known as Melkor. In the elven tongues, or the Eldar, as they're called, the elves, the Eldar, he is known as Morgoth. And so Morgoth was cast out, and there's a whole bunch of stories you can read about Morgoth being chained up for a long time, for a whole age, and then he gets unchained, and they think he's repented, and he causes all kind of havoc and causes the friction in the world of the Ainur. But the Ainur become known as the Valar. The Valar are the perfect creation of Ilúvatar, or Eru, as he's also known as. It's interesting to see how this has to do with Christianity, because you see Morgoth taking his evil people with him, and he is the Dark Lord, and he is directly responsible for Sauron in the Lord of the Rings. Sauron was a servant of his, as was Ungoliant and other servants of Morgoth. So the elves and men and dwarves, what's the deal here? Well, Ilúvatar created two kindreds. It was the kindred of elves, and there was the kindred of man. Elves are known as the Eldar, or older kindred, and man is known as the younger kindred. The dwarves were not created by Ilúvatar. They were not created by him. They were created by one of the Valar. I think his name was Ulmo. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at the Silmarillion, and I'm not going to do that because it's a waste of your time. But for the sake of this, we'll just assume that it's Ulmo. I don't know. I don't know about that. Anyway, let's just be on the safe side and say it was one of the Valar. One of the lesser Valar. Certainly wasn't Manwë. Manwë was the chief of the Valar. So it wasn't him. One of the Valar got so excited that he wanted to create his own being. So he created these little short, stout people called dwarves. And when Ilúvatar found out about it, he was angry. And he asked him, what in the world was he doing messing with creation? That's not his to create. Well, after the Valar fella, known as a Valar, after he pleaded and begged to keep them, he said, okay, but they won't have any place in my realm. So the dwarves remain with us, but they are not of the two kindreds. And they live in the mountains. They live in like caves and underground habitats. And they work in the mines, and they make things of stone, and they're very cold and, unfeeling, uncaring. As a matter of fact, in some Tolkien's older works, the dwarves are in league with the orcs and the evil beings. But that's not the case in The Lord of the Rings, at least not wholly the case. So let's talk about elves and men. Of the elves, elves are very similar to men in stature, and they're male and female elves. And we don't call them elves. We call them elves. And we don't say elven, we say elvish. That's Tolkienite, Tolkienizing everything. So he didn't like elven and anything like that. So we'll talk like him here. The elves, or the Eldar, or they're called the Quendi. The Quendi were the people, the elves, and they are really neat. They're a little taller than men, and they are immortal. Elves can die, but when they die, which, by the way, they can't get sick. Elves don't get sick like we do. You can kill one. You can kill an elf, or you can an elf can just waste away. You'll lie down and croak. And that's what happens to a lady named Indus in the Silmarillion. She just pines away and dies. But when that happens, they go to a place called the Hall of Mandos. And in the Hall of Mandos, their spirit sits there and waits, and eventually they come back. Now, I don't know when they ever came back. I never heard, of any instance where an elf came back, but they don't die forever. In other words, they're immortal. They'll keep coming back. You can't kill them with sickness or anything like that. You can physically kill them. You can stab them or shoot them or whatever. Elves were experts with the bow. and Arrow. And you'll see this with Legolas in the Lord of the Rings. Legolas is always talking about his bow and arrows. But anyhow, they were cool. Elves could live billions and hundreds of thousands of quadrillions of years. Whatever, I don't know. Men, on the other hand, had no future when they died. Men, because of their imperfections, were lesser in the eyes of Ilúvatar, and the reason is because men were so apt to choose evil. And men usually chose evil over good, unlike the elves, with key exceptions. So man was created after the elves, and man lived in the east. The elves lived in the west, and man lived in the east of Middle-earth. And man doesn't come along for a long, long time. So after these two creations wake up and realize who they are, the great movement of the elves westward begins. And eventually all the elves leave Middle-earth and come to a place, excuse me for that throat clearing, by the way. The elves come to Middle-earth, or come to the end of Middle-earth, and advance toward Valinor, which is the home of the Valar. It's the perfect place, paradise, if you will. And eventually, most of the elves are taken up into Valinor, which you have to understand, at this time in history, Valinor was visible from Middle-earth, separated by the Great Western Sea, and there's the island of Arisaea, and the Lonely Isle, you know, stuff like that. And there were three distinct bands of high elves. Now, of course, you got your wood elves and your gray elves and your stuff like that. We're talking about the three high elfish clans. There were the Vanyar, who were the most highly favored of Manwë, the chief of the Valar. There were the Noldor, who are the most famous and the most creative of the elves. And there were the Teleri. And the Teleri got to a certain point, and they decided they didn't want to come all the way into Valinor because they liked the sea. Matter of fact, they stayed on this side of the sea for many years, many generations, and they finally were persuaded to come to Valinor, but they still stayed on the edge so that they could be on the sea. So they were sea lovers and all that good stuff. Well, everything went along just happy as a lark for many ages. And you can read about this in the Silmarillion. There's the noon and the night of Valinor. And they had trees in Valinor that were forever and ever type trees. And there was just all kind of stuff you can read about. But the thing that's interesting to us is eventually Melkor is unchained. And when he's unchained, he pretends to be repentant, so they believe him. And he is allowed to walk free in Valinor, in a city called Valdemar. I think that's Valimar. He befriends one of the Noldor, whose name is Feanor. Feanor is the greatest craftsman ever created. He's the greatest craftsman that has ever been known. And he made several of these little gizmos, stones or whatever they were, called Silmarils. And the Silmarils pretty much vanished, but it was just the whole deal with the Silmarils and the Silmarillion and all that stuff. But the point is here, Feanor got so caught up in his own work that he befriended Melkor, or Morgoth, same guy. And Morgoth convinces him that he's greater than the Valar. And when the darkness hits Valinor, they need one of the Silmarils, because the Silmarils can light anything, anytime, anywhere. They're so bright. He refuses to give it to them. And he decides that he's tired of living with the Valar, and he's leaving. He's going to Middle-earth. Remember, Valinor is visible to Middle-earth, and Middle-earth is visible from Valinor. So the Noldor follow him. The Vanyar and the Teleri do not. They don't follow him. The Teleri live at a place called Aqualondë, or Aqualondë. And the Teleri have been famous for making these white swan ships. I told you they love the sea, and they love to sail these white swan ships. So they make these ships all the time. This is what they're known for. So like, you know, Elvis and Gyrations on stage. You know, it's just hand in hand, hand in glove, whatever. How appropriate. We're talking about elves. Elvis. Elvish. Anyway. The Noldor flee. I don't want to use the term flee. They run from Valinor. And as they're running from Valinor, there are two brothers. One named Finarfin, and one named Fingolfin. And they are also joined by an elf lady called Galadriel. And you hear a lot about her in The Lord of the Rings. Point being, Finarfin just can't bear to leave the Valinor. Can't leave the land of Valinor. So he and a small group of the Noldor turn back and are pardoned by the Valar. You see, when they were fleeing, as they were standing on the cliffs, the Valar issued a warning to the Noldor, saying, if you leave, you will be cursed for many, 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 many hundreds of years, many generations, whatever. And Feanor and his band laughed at him. So most of the Noldor kept going. And they got to the edge of Valinor, and they needed to get to Middle-earth, and it didn't want to go north, because that's the cold, dark lands, you know, where Morgoth does his thing, and it's a dangerous land, and they didn't want to do that. They wanted a quick way across. So Feanor approaches the Teleri and says, look, we need your ships. You know, we need your ships. And way back when the Teleri were still on the other side, the Noldor had helped them get across, had created houses and stuff for them, stone stuff, you know, showed them how to be craftsmen and everything, and basically kept them going when they got over there. They were kind of bored, and the Noldor sort of helped them out. So Feanor says, you owe us. You need to pay us back. And the leader of the Teleri said, no. Mm-mm. You did that on your own, and listen, we're eternally grateful, but you're not getting our ships. You know, this is what we do forever and ever. These are ours. You can't have them. And remember, you can kill elves by shooting them or stabbing them or whatever. They just can't die on their own. At Aqualondë, the greatest massacre in elven history, or elvish, as Tolkien would say, history, takes place. The Noldor get angry, and the battle ensues between the Noldor and the Teleri. And the Teleri are basically slaughtered. Very few are left alive. There are enough, but, you know, not many. And the ships are taken by the Noldor. And the ships are used to cross the Great Sea. Well, part of the Noldor go north anyway, under Fingolfin. Fingolfin was actually a cool dude, and I don't know why he went with the whole deal. He just couldn't say no to Feanor. Feanor was a very charismatic guy. In other words, they all finally got to Middle-earth, and they began to settle in areas like Beleriand and Lothlorien and Gondolin, the greatest of elven cities, elvish cities, Gondolin. so many kingdoms of the elves. Now, this lasted many hundreds of years, and eventually most of the elves, I mean, elves got to know men, and they got to know dwarves. They didn't trust either one. Men they trusted more than they did elves, dwarves, because men actually aided them in several of their great wars. But eventually elves and men would split apart and not trust each other. Most of the elves eventually would turn west and were pardoned by the Valar and accepted back into the kingdom thereof, of Valinor. And the thing is, after the exile of the Noldor, or the flight of the Noldor, it's called, the flight of the Noldor, Valinor was sealed off. In other words, it was no longer visible to Middle-earth, and Middle-earth was no longer visible to it. And when an elf gets old or decides that he don't want to be in the world anymore, he can turn west and the Valar will accept him back. He can cross the Great Sea on those great swan ships we talked about that the Teleri still make to this day, if you believe in the world of Tolkien, which, you know, it's really cool. Anyway, the Teleri still await any elves that might want to come west. Meanwhile, there were a couple of incidents that are worth mentioning because of the Lord of the Rings. There was union between man and elf, I think two or three times. I'm talking about conjugal union. Usually a female elf and a male, you know, guy or something like that. I don't know. But the point being, one of those unions resulted in Eärendil being the first man to ever find Valinor. And when he found it, I mean, men were not allowed in Valinor. You know, because men, when they die, they disappear. They just go out into darkness. But only the elves can go to Valinor. Well, he was allowed in because he found it. He was a great mariner, and he sailed a great, great ship. And he found it, and they allowed him in. He was the only man that we know of that ever was accepted into Valinor. There was another man that was accepted, but that's a whole different story. And I'm going to get confused and get you confused if I try to go into too much. But point being, there were two guys born of one of these man-elf unions, Elrond and I think his name was Elrod or something like that. Well, one chose to be a man and one chose to be an elf. Elrond is the one who chose to be the elf, and the other guy helped found the kingdom of Numenor, which was the great western kingdom of man. Numenor was sort of in between Middle-earth and Valinor. Now, after all the elves of consequence had gone, there were still elves around, but most of them had gone back into Valinor, the Numenor become the focus of Tolkien's work. And the Numenorians were men. They were long-living men. They could live 600, 700, 800 years. They were very hardy people. Now, this was not true of the regular men of Middle-earth who had begun to come west after the elves left and all the destruction wreaked by the havoc that was wreaked by Morgoth and his orcs. What's an orc? Well, an orc is a bad elf or bad, you know, bad creatures. People that had been corrupted by Morgoth. They were not orcs because they wanted to be orcs. They were orcs because they were made into orcs. Anybody that was captured or made prisoner by Morgoth became an orc. Or as they say in Britain, orc, the orcs. So the men began to populate Middle-earth. Or Middle-earth. I'm going into my British accent, excuse me. But Numenor was great. I like to quote the Book of Kings when it says, "And he did right in the sight of the Lord." Well, the Numenor did that which was right in the sight of the Valar. And there was one condition that could never be altered. the Numenor would be allowed to always stay where they were and commune with the elves across the sea. You know, the elves could come back to Middle-earth and see them and visit with them, but men could not try to find Valinor. That was the condition. You could sail anywhere you wanted to, but don't try to sail to Valinor. Don't try to find it. Well, before long, the Numenoreans began to get jealous of the elves because the elves were immortal. And the Numenoreans wanted immortality, like the elves. You know, men got old and gray and eventually died. And the elves counseled them. They said, now look, you don't want to be immortal. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, an elf can live for 300 billion years and can be so worn out, he'll beg for death. I mean, after a while, an elf gets tired, you know, and he begs for somebody to kill him or something. But he can't die unless somebody stabs him or physically harms him. Well, men didn't understand this, and they wanted immortality, so they started doing everything they could. And eventually, there was a great attempt by one of the kings of Numenor, the last king of Numenor, to find Valinor and to achieve their aim. Now, Valinor was still visible to this island. It was still visible to Numenor. We talked about eventually it was made invisible. Well, it still can be seen on the horizon. It's not as visible as it was, but it can still be seen. So the Numenoreans get in their big ships, their great mariners, and they head west, and they find Valinor. And the elves tell them before they leave out, now, if you come to Valinor, I don't know what you're going to do, because nobody's going to want you. You know, nobody's going to talk to you. Nobody's going to help you. Please don't do this. Be cool. Accept the will of Ilúvatar, and don't try to impose your will. Well, the Numenoreans didn't listen. Numenor is destroyed because these men land on Valinor and try to take over, and they are destroyed, and so is the kingdom of Numenor. Now, all this time, there's a very small minority of Numenoreans who are loyal to the Valar. They are loyal to the Valar. They have learned the Elvish languages, and they know that the elves are wise. They trust the elves. And these alone escape to Middle-earth, and they live amongst mortal men. And I say mortal men, regular men, normal men. These guys are mortal, but they're very long living, longevity. You know, they 800-900 years, like I said. But they hide out in Middle Earth. That's just a rundown of what happened. And Sauron is responsible for all this, because after the great war with the Valar and the elves and the men come together. See, when that gentleman went out to find Valinor, the gentleman I told you about, he was distraught because he wanted elves and men to be pardoned by the Valar. And they were, and they all joined together and had a huge battle and defeated Morgoth. Well, one of the servants of Morgoth was Sauron. And Sauron had many defeats and many gains and all this, and he's the one who caused the havoc in Numenor. And eventually he caused the downfall of Numenor. Well, you have these rings that were created. I think there were 7 of them, or 9 of them. 9, I think. I'm not going to go into the details, because what I tell you would be wrong. I'm not sure. I've read it several times, but I don't know definitely. You know, I don't have the definite figures and all that. It's just too much. You'd have to read the Silmarillion and the parts thereafter to find out about the story of the rings. But what happens is, the ring that has all the power over the other rings is lost. And it is possessed by it's in a river of some sort. Like I said, I don't want to get you confused. Meanwhile, after all this, we have a little race of people who are called halflings by the elves. And they call themselves hobbits. Little short people with hairy feet, hairy people. They live in holes. When we used to make comedy routines, we'd call them obits, you know, in the Cockney type. You know, they lived in obit holes. You know, we'd say that in Cockney English. Anyway, these obits lived in their little holes, and they didn't bother anybody. They didn't care what was going on outside the world, and they didn't care what was happening. They were lazy, and they liked to eat and drink and have a good time. Well, one of the main hobbits was Mr. Bilbo Baggins, lived at Bag End. He met up with Gandalf, who was a wizard, Gandalf the Grey. Gandalf the Grey told him about the ring. He went to find the ring, did his thing, met Gollum, bad guy, servant of Sauron. He got the ring, and he used it. Gollum wanted the ring, and he didn't get it. He was tricked. You need to read The Lord of the Ring to find out how. And that brings you up to the very beginning of The Lord of the Rings, where Bilbo decides he can go no longer, so he gives the ring to his nephew Frodo. Well, actually, he doesn't. Actually, he has his 11th birthday. And on his 11th birthday, he puts the ring on and disappears. Because when you put the ring on, you become invisible. And eventually, Gandalf brings Frodo, the nephew of Bilbo Baggins, he brings Frodo the ring and says, "This is what you got to do." Frodo says, "I don't know about this." And remember we talked about Elrond? Well, Elrond features prominently in The Lord of the Rings, and we also talked about Galadriel, the great elvish lady, the queen of Lothlorien, wife of Celeborn. Yeah, the great elven, whatever. Point being, you are now brought up to The Lord of the Rings. I promised you a little background, and that's it. Don't talk just a little bit about Tolkien's languages. Tolkien was a professor of languages, as we've talked about, and he specialized in the making of languages. He was a linguist. He specialized in Anglo-Saxon literature. Well, he created languages for the elves, men, and dwarves. And I do mean real languages. And, you know, he didn't intend for you to be able to speak these languages. These are not languages you can learn. Like, you can't go out and learn Quenya, which is the language of the High Elves. In other words, the Vanyar, the elves who never left Valinor, the Quenya. When they sing and everything, it's in High Elven, or the Eldar, language of the Eldar. The Noldor, also known as the Eldar, but when they came to Middle-earth, they began to be known by the language they spoke, Sindar. And the Noldorian dialect, and the Noldorian dialect, whatever. There were many dialects of Sindar, but point being, Tolkien developed whole languages. Well, I say whole. They had grammars and lexicons and all that. They're not complete. As a matter of fact, he never intended to complete them. He said he never spoke any of his languages. He didn't intend to speak them. He called them art languages. And if you want to study them, there's a lot of stuff on the internet. You can go to www.elvish.org. I think that's the site, elvish.org, and that's a great site to start. They've even got people who are singing in elven now, or elvish. They got people singing in it, you know, just inventing their own songs and writing songs in Elvish. And there's a CD out by some lady named Stephanie or something like that. Anyway, she's singing in Elvish, and it's beautiful. There's samples. But he never intended for these languages to be everyday languages. These languages are sort of like studying Gothic or Anglo-Saxon. You know, we don't speak them. We just study them scholarly. So you can study them that way, but you can never study them as you would study Spanish or whatever. So there's no way to actually speak the language. Now you can actually learn how to say hello or, you know, stuff like that. But you can't carry on a daily conversation in Elvish. There just isn't enough grammar to do that. But there's enough for you to actually get the majestic sounds of Elvish. It's really cool. So he did that, and he was very wrapped up in these languages, and he also made maps of the whole Middle Earth realm. And these are not just little sketches. I mean, these are full maps. It took him 20 to 30 years to do these. And it's just cool as can be. Now, we can't see them, but we can get somebody to describe them to us. Like, if you want to know where Mordor is, the land of the Sauron, you know, Mordor, or Lothlorien, the home of Celeborn and Galadriel, you can find all that. Of course, you know the Lord of the Rings. There's a trilogy out called The Fellowship of the Ring, The Two Towers, and The Return of the King. And these are based on the three books of the same name. I say based on because there's a lot of differences, but it doesn't matter. Christopher Tolkien said that there's no way his father's works could be put into movie form, and that's all he would say. He didn't condemn or condone Peter Jackson. He just said, I don't want to see it. You know, I don't think there's a way that you can possibly put my father's works into film, because he would have never intended it that way. So he hasn't condoned or condemned. Matter of fact, he said, I have never said anything against Peter Jackson, never will. But I've never said anything for him either. And that's the opinion of Christopher Tolkien. There was even rumors out in the Tolkien world that there was a rift in the family, but that's never been substantiated. I personally agree with Christopher Tolkien that there's no way that Tolkien's vision could be put into film form, although I love the films. You have to take them for what they are. They're Peter Jackson's interpretations of Tolkien. Nobody can interpret Tolkien but Tolkien, and he's dead, so we no longer have that luxury. There are several editions of The Lord of the Rings. There's the regular edition and the extended editions. If you're going to buy them, I would buy the whole set and buy the director's cuts, you know, the extended editions. Get the scenes that were taken out and get all that. And the soundtracks are great. The music's fantastic. You can listen to Enya and other people. And so that's a little bit about the films. There are two versions of the audio dramatization. Now, we're not talking about the books. There are several versions of the Lord of the Rings books that are read in audio. I think the Library of Congress, the people that do Web Braille, NLS, did a version of them, and they did a version of The Hobbit. And then there's the regular books you can buy, like Audible or, I don't know, Simon Schuster, somebody has the whole Lord of the Rings that you can buy. But we're talking about radio dramatizations or audio dramatization. There are two main ones. The one by Mind's Eye, which is an American version, and I wouldn't give you 10 cents for it, although there are probably those who love it. You check it out at highbridgeaudio.com, I think, is where you can get that, highbridgeaudio.com. And then there's the BBC version, which in my opinion is the best presentation of The Lord of the Rings to date. And I think it's the best even above the films. There's so much visual stuff in the films that we can't see or get. That's not the case in the audio version by the BBC. It's fantastic. Mr. Ian Holm as Frodo Baggins, Mr. Robert Stevens, and I can't think of the guy's name that plays Gandalf. Anyway, there's so many good people. Peter Woodruff plays Gollum. I'm not going to imitate Gollum here. I should. Gollum the evil dude. And anyway, that's the version you want to get. You can get that from Amazon.com, or I'm sure Amazon.co.uk or Amazon.ca. Point is, Amazon. They have the BBC version. It's 13 CDs, and it comes with maps, from what I can tell. I'm not sure about the maps, but I think it comes with maps, And I hope it does, and I hope one day I get it. I've heard parts of it, but I've never heard the whole thing. I'm hoping I might get it for Christmas. I don't know about that. But anyway, it's supposed to be really, really awesome. So go check that out at Amazon. And I think you can order it. If you're in the UK, you can order it directly from the BBC. Now, they won't ship to us here in the US, I don't think, but you can order it from the BBC. But Amazon may be cheaper for you. Check it out and see. I really don't know. So that's a little bit on the audio versions of The Lord of the Rings. And please note that the opinions expressed here are mine, and they're not meant to deter. If you think the films are better, that's great. Personally, I think the films are absolutely fantastic. I just like the audio dramatization better. That doesn't mean I won't go buy the films or whatever. That just means I like the... Well, let's not say better. Let's say there's a different... It's a different type of experience. And I get into the audio version more than I do the films. I don't want to say I like them better because Peter Jackson did a fantastic job. And he's going to do King Kong. Can you dig it? King Kong's coming out next week or the week after, something like that. And I'm going to see it. I've seen every King Kong movie up until this one. So, you know, let's go see what he does. But The Lord of the Rings was filmed in New Zealand. And what a place to film it. Beautiful, beautiful country from what I hear. I wonder if it was on the North Island or the South Island. I don't know. Oh, Jonathan, oh, Paula, anybody from New Zealand, David Allen, do you guys know where The Lord of the Rings was filmed? Anyway, that's all I know, and I brought you up to date. Now, I want to talk about one last thing before I go. There is a book called The Hobbit. The Hobbit is a kid's book. It's not on the same level as The Lord of the Rings. Sorry, guys. The Hobbit is a little kid's book. I mean, it's great. I like it, but it's not as in-depth as The Lord of the Rings. It's about Bilbo's quest to get the ring and all that good jazz, and I didn't get through it. I was looking for the more intellectual books, The Lord of the Rings, the whole series. And, oh, by the way, if you read Braille, Web Braille has all of them. Web Braille has The Silmarillion, which is 4 volumes. Web Braille has The Hobbit, which is 3 volumes, or 2. I think there's 2 versions. And they also have The Fellowship of the Ring, which is 5 volumes, The Two Towers, which is 4, and The Return of the King, which is 5. I think I've got those right. But if you're a Web Braille member, you can go get those. I don't know how much is available on Bookshare, but I don't think as much is. I don't think they're... Well, they might be. I don't want to say that. Just go check Bookshare and see for yourself, because I when I can read Web Braille, I don't read Bookshare because the scans can be hideous. Although some scans are absolutely fantastic. Some of them are... ugh. Anyway, thank you, by the way, for those who scan those books. Ugh is better than nothing. So when you're in college or when you want to read something really good, you take the ick and you read it. So I'm very appreciative of Bookshare. I just, when there's a better version, I go get it. And usually Web Braille is much better than Bookshare. But there's not as much stuff on Web Braille. At least not as much good stuff. So that's the Lord of the Rings podcast. I promised some people on the list, that BCT list, that I would do this. And I told him I might just do a podcast on The Lord of the Rings, and here it is. So, and if you like The Hobbit, you know, read it first, and read The Lord of the Rings next. If you want to do it all, read The Silmarillion first, and try to find the Book of Tales, the Lost Book of Tales, 1 and 2. Try to read that, if you can find it, and then read The Hobbit, and then The Lord of the Rings. If you're not into kids' books, don't read The Hobbit. And I'm not putting The Hobbit down. I'm just saying it's not on the same par as Lord of the Rings. And there is a BBC version of The Hobbit. And you can get that too. Matter of fact, I think Amazon has a deal where you can get The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings together for a reduced price. So check that out. I thank you for spending a few moments of your time with me. The ultimate J.R.R. Tolkien fan. And I encourage you to give me feedback. Send me some email at jack728@gmail.com. That's jack728@gmail.com. And let me know what you think of this podcast or what you don't think of this podcast or all that good stuff. I hope this has encouraged you to go read The Lord of the Rings or watch it or listen to it or all three. I'm going to do all three. So certainly hope this has been of some value to you, and look forward to any feedback you might have. And anybody listening on Blind Cool Tech, if this is posted on Blind Cool Tech, thanks for listening. Thank you, Larry, for posting it. And you all have a great weekend, and keep the world of Middle Earth alive. Keep the imagination going. There's absolutely, if you're a devout Christian or anything like that, there's absolutely nothing in these books that would keep you from reading them. There's nothing incompatible with Christianity or any other religion. However, young kids don't need to read these, at least under 14. Don't really need to read these, because they do get dark. They get violent. They're dark. So keep them out of the hands of young kids. Now, The Hobbit, anybody can read. You know, The Hobbit is just an all-around good book, and kids can love The Hobbit. So, but The Lord of the Rings and The Silmarillion especially. As a matter of fact, some adults won't like The Silmarillion because it is very disturbing, very in-depth. So you want to be careful. And there's no trickery or magic going on here, per se. I'm not a Harry Potter fan. I'll tell you that up front. I know that there are millions and millions of Harry Potter fans, but I'm not one of them. And this is nothing like Harry Potter. So if you're not a Harry Potter fan and you still want to try these out, do so. If you are a Harry Potter fan and you love these books, well, great. That's fantastic. Keep reading whatever you want to read. Just educate yourself. Just read. Harry Potter is certainly a very different type of genre than this is. This is pure fantasy, and you know it's fantasy, and you know it's, you know, it doesn't involve witchcraft of any kind. So, there you go. There is good and evil, and good wins, and it takes a long time for good to win, and there's no trickery involved or anything like that. Good just finally wins out. And it's really awesome. So check it out, and let me know what you think. And if, as I say again, if this is on BCT, Blind Cool Tech, you guys on the BCT list, let me know what you think of this too, because we've had some wonderful discussion going on about The Lord of the Rings, and the music in that British version I think is fantastic. The music is just great. I wish we didn't have to worry about copyright, because I'd play you some of the music. It's great. But anyway, there you are. Take care. Have a great weekend. Hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll see you on number 22.